There was this moment when Gary Bettman invited the entire Tampa Bay Lightning group up to the Stanley Cup for the presentation of the trophy. And Steven Stamkos got there before anybody else. He leaned down and he gave the trophy a little kiss. It was beautiful. It was emotional. It was a life's work in one little kiss. And then everybody else gathered around and it was a pandemonium. Now they party and they enjoy every moment of back-to-back championships as 31 clubs strategize to unseat the Tampa Bay Lightning. Today, I'm going to chat with John Shannon, my good buddy, who goes around the National Hockey League to discuss what is in store for the Challengers and where the Tampa Bay Lightning go from here. And then we will chat with Don Granato, coach of the Buffalo Sabres. The stars are aligned for a regroup for Buffalo, or is it about aligning the stars? We'll chat with Don Granato next on The Chirp with Darren Millard.
Heads up! Oh, how'd that feel, old man?
You guys are sensitive over there.
What are you going to do? You!
Shut up!
Let's jump right into it. We've got Don Granato, head coach of the Buffalo Sabres, coming up in just a little bit to chat all about the family and the journey that he took and what lies ahead. Jack Eichel will be on that table for discussion as well. But out of the gate, with the season completed, let's bring in a man of many talents, none of them which I truly appreciate as much as I should. But here's John Shannon, former executive producer of Hockey Night in Canada, announcer, and now co-host of the Bob McCowan podcast and owner of the replica Stanley Cup. This is in the hours after Tampa Bay won the Stanley Cup. I don't think that's the real cup behind you, is it?
No, but I'll tell you what, it is the it's the last day it'll be on the set, so enjoy it.
And what do you do with that? Like, do you ever think that, because it is such a great replica, of just putting it out in front of the doorstep one day and just seeing how many cars stop by?
No, but I will tell you a story. So in 1997, the replica Stanley Cup stood in for the real one. My neighbor at the time was a guy named Jamie McCowan, who had just won the Stanley Cup with the Detroit Red Wings. And the cup was delayed getting to his house for his Stanley Cup party. And so Jamie phoned and said, hey, buddy, how you doing? Can you bring the cup down? So I brought the cup down discreetly and put it in a place in his backyard on the edge of a little bit of a waterfall pond, so nobody could get too close to it, because from about 15 feet it looks identical. The biggest difference for most people is rather than names, it's X's and Y's on the bottom of the cup. So.
Is there any names on it? Any no. actual names?
No. It was built and designed for a movie. And I was working, as you said, at Hockey Night in Canada at the time. And the CBC, who had done the movie, were going to destroy it. And I said, don't destroy it. We can use that on the set at times when we can't get the real thing. And so for many years, when I was running Hockey Night in Canada, the Stanley Cup was the phony one, and we got to do with it what we wanted.
How much does that thing weigh?
This one, about 12 pounds. It's the magic of technology and plastic, Darren. That's what it is.
We have a lot to get to with you, and thanks for joining us, because this is a perfect time for John Shannon to pop on, because we're transferring rights deals in the National Hockey League on the television side in the United States. So I want to get your opinion on that. We've got the Tampa Bay Lightning repeating as Stanley Cup champions. We've got the expansion draft coming up. There's a lot to get to. So settle in. You've got a comfortable chair there, right?
I'm in good shape, man.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't go that far. You're a shape. How much are you golfing these days? Playing golf?
Well, not enough. How's that? Okay. Just not enough.
I wouldn't plan on playing today. That's for sure. Let's talk about the season. Tampa Bay. Is this really a surprise that they would repeat as Stanley Cup champions given their lineup?
No, I don't think it is. Any prognostication when the season started, what was that, January? Mm-hmm. That's the hard part to think about. It started in January. Any prognostication had Tampa coming out of one of the divisions, and in theory being one of the conference champions. So from that perspective, Tampa getting to the final, even though Carolina and Florida finished ahead of them in their division, but Tampa finishing and winning the Stanley Cup shouldn't be a surprise. to me, obviously, the surprise is who they played in the Stanley Cup final and how Montreal got there. They weren't supposed to beat Toronto. They did. They weren't supposed to beat Vegas, and they did. And quite frankly, I think there's lots of people that thought that Vegas shouldn't be there. It should be Colorado. And I think that people were licking their chops for a Tampa-Colorado Stanley Cup final. And that didn't happen. And Montreal made Cinderella look pretty good for the most part until game five.
So is it more expected that Tampa Bay will get back there next year as a three-time finalist?
I think that's a good question. You know, everybody talks about, even John Cooper talked about after the game, we know this team won't be together again. At least twice during the playoffs, there was some sort of speech made by one of the senior members of the team, whether it's Stamkos or Hedman, that we better get our act together because this team isn't going to be together when the season starts in October. But at the same time, Darren, the core's not going anywhere. Andre Vasilevsky's not going anywhere. Victor Hedman's not going anywhere. Kucherov's not going anywhere. Braden Point isn't going anywhere. This is still going to be a very, very good hockey team when the next season starts. We may miss a few guys from this roster. Where's Tyler Johnson going to end up? Is he going to go to the Pacific Northwest? Alex Killorn. Can you believe Alex Killorn with a rod in his leg? I can't believe he even skated with the cup after game five. But Alex Killorn thought he might be able to play, and he took the warm up in game four. I mean, holy smokes. That's stuff of legend, but where's Killorn going to end up? For me, you wonder that they have such a good thing going there. Will Julien Brisebois be able to get people to take real big discounts to stay if they want them to stay? Because financially, Florida is a great place to live. And keep as much of the team together as possible. But, you know, we know they're over the cap. Gosh, Twitter told me that 60 million times last night, that they're over the cap. There's going to be some changes. There's no question, but the core is not going anywhere. So they're going to be a factor next year too.
Now, normally you would say getting the three straight finals, will be difficult because of the fatigue factor. They didn't play a full regular season the first championship, and then had a break before going to the bubble and no travel outside of one trip between Toronto and Edmonton. This year, it was a compacted schedule, but 56 games. Does that help them get to a third straight final? Or am I just looking for an angle?
I think you're looking for an angle. The players, you know, how long will the players take to celebrate this one? 3 weeks, and before everybody says, okay, we better get back at it. We got to get in shape, you know. So by the early August, are they talking about getting back on the ice, going into the weight room? Camp starts, you know, if the season starts the second week of October, camp starts the second week of September. They will have enjoyed their time at the cottage, at the lake, at the cabin, depending on what part of North America you live in. And they'll be ready to play. But it's something to be said for all the extra games they play. You know, Ryan McDonough, for instance, has played, I think, 162 playoff games in his career. He's played two extra seasons of playoff hockey. And at a certain point, that has to have wear and tear on your body.
Is Andre Vasilevsky the best player in the world? Would you put him in the category with Connor McDavid?
You know, you goaltenders always try to morph into people that they aren't. They're not skaters. I don't think that's such a difficult comparison. I mean, that's why they have their own trophies. Because you can't compare what Connor McDavid does, both mentally and physically in a game, to what Andre Vasilevsky does. I'm not saying one is better than the other. But categorically, I mean, it's like saying, is Tom Brady the same as an offensive lineman? You know, it's different. It's a different animal. Right now, I think Andre Vasilevsky is the best goaltender in the world. And I think we got a really good sense of that in game five more than any other. But at the same time, I don't think that's a comparison that you can really make unless you're trying to create some sort of argument.
John Cooper, Olympic team, hard to go past a guy that's won back-to-back Stanley Cups.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, Olympic team for Canada, there's no question. Why wouldn't you consider him for the Olympic team for the United States too, though, at some point, even though, I mean, he's a dual citizen. He's actually spent more of his coaching life in the United States than he has in Canada. But it's, I would think that a kid from Prince George, BC would be a really good choice. I've always been on the Joel Quenneville bandwagon. I mean, Joel did not get rewarded at an Olympics as a head coach. And he won 3 Stanley Cups for Chicago. Look what he's done in Florida in the short period of time he's done there. So to me, it is between those two guys to be the head coach for Canada. And I wouldn't object to either one. The short term is, yeah, John Cooper. He's the poster child right now. He's the hot guy. But if you told me it was Joel Quenneville, I still remember telling Mike Babcock in 2014, you shouldn't be the coach this time. Joel Quenneville's won 2 Stanley Cups and you won yours last in 2008. Joel's won 2 since then. Joel, it should be Joel's turn, but you know, Hockey Canada didn't seem to agree with me.
It worked out for Hockey Canada. How did it work out for you and Babs?
Hey, we're buds.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Hey, listen, if you look somebody in the eye and you tell them the truth, they can't complain. They can't complain. My problem is I've looked too many people in the eye and told too many truths.
You're speaking to a crowd at Wembley. That's what you're doing. will we go to the Olympics? I'm on my way right now, as this probably airs, as people listen to this, on my way to Tokyo. But will the National Hockey League go to Beijing?
Hey, I think that's a multifaceted question. Will country after Tokyo, when after Tokyo ends, are we going to see a pushback from some nations not to go to China for the Olympics? I think that's one question to consider. You know, will the United States, will President Biden to say, like Jimmy Carter did prior to the Moscow Olympics, you know what, we don't like the human rights issues in China and we're not going to go, or we don't like the way you're treating certain areas of their world, their satellite countries, we're not going to go. That's something that has to be considered. If the American and the Canadian teams decide to go and attend the Olympics in Beijing, I still have my doubts about whether the National Hockey League will go. Personal opinion, no inside knowledge. I've been around the Olympics. I've been around the NHL to know and think that I know what both sides need and want. I'm still not sure that the NHL will get what it wants from the IOC in order to make it worth their while, even though, and as Gary has admitted, he promised the players he would do his best to get them to the Olympics, but there still has to be some business issues resolved before that occurs.
In your own mind, give me a percentage.
45%.
That's pretty good. The idea, by the way, Cooper being the American coach, I hadn't thought of that. I don't think you need to be a citizen to be the coach. We've had Canadians who are coaching Latvia and different countries. So
absolutely, it was one that I thought of quite a while ago. When you consider where he cut his teeth in Michigan and in Green Bay and in Texas, he's as. And hey, as you know, I'm a BC boy too. That's one of the things Cooper and I have in common. We always talk about British Columbia, but why not consider him for Team USA? Why not?
Yeah, but you're not Lower Mainland. Well, he's not either.
He's not either. He's in the Cariboo.
Yeah,
I'm in the Okanagan. I'm in the Okanagan. He's in the Cariboo. But we're on the same highway. How about this? We're on the same highway.
How close can you get your hand to that camera?
Well, I can do that, but you know.
Looks like you had a gardening accident.
I used to point at people a lot. So
Look by people the way, in the eye and point them.
By the way, it was Highway 97. Right down the middle of British Columbia, Highway 97.
That's not a four-laner, is it?
It's barely two.
There's some runoff places on that one.
Well, yeah, but you know what? We got lines on it now. It's good.
The expansion draft is coming up. How chaotic do you think the next 2 weeks will be?
You know, I'm a little in left field on this one. I keep telling friends, I say, why are you panicking? You're only going to lose one player. Yeah. You're only losing one player. Why are you worried about this? Well, you know, I mean, it's not going to be your top six. It's not going to be maybe in certain situations, whether you take the 7-3-1 or the 8-1 scenario. Why are you so up against it about this? Well, it could be a really good player. I know, but you know, your owner's getting $24 million. Mm-hmm. You lose one player for $24 million. That's okay. That's okay. I'd rather worry about who I have and rather than who I'm going to lose. And then not have to do what a couple of teams did, you know, what Chuck did in Minnesota, what Dale had to do in Florida at the time. I mean, I'm not sure.
I think we're still going to see some of that.
So am I. Yeah. So am I, because I think guys get into a little bit of a fever about these types of things and can they outsmart Ron Francis? By the way, I also think that I wouldn't be surprised to see our friends in Vegas play a bit of a role in this and be a bit of a dumping ground somehow, some way, and do a favor for somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, Kelly and George are smart guys, and they're not really involved in the draft, but they can actually assist and maybe put a player somewhere else at a certain point, and that would be good.
Yeah, Vegas will not lose a player for the expansion draft. The idea of Seattle being competitive, do you think they make the playoffs next year?
Well, they're in the right division.
Right.
And so the challenge becomes, and which is why I think you saw Rob Blake do the Victor Arvidsson deal. He knows, he can smell the playoffs in the water too for the LA Kings. You have to hope and think that the three California teams are going to be better. You have Seattle, you know, then the question with Arizona leaving, the question becomes Vancouver, Calgary, and Edmonton. I fully expect Edmonton to be as good as they were this year. And then the question becomes is what are Travis and Jim going to be able to do in Vancouver? Once Pedersen is signed, once Quinn Hughes is signed, and how can they bolster their blue line? So from that perspective, I would not be surprised to see Seattle at least in some sort of playoff race as we get into the second half of the season.
Do you think we talk about this more because of the Pacific Division and the possibility of Seattle making the playoffs or because of what Vegas has been able to do and did during their first couple of years?
I think the latter. You know, what we saw Vegas do on every level. On every level was absolutely amazing. I mean, growing your fan base, creating an environment that is truly home ice advantage, balancing the budget so that in those first couple of years that everybody felt that they were part of the same, pulling in the same direction. It was an extraordinary event for, I think, until the end of year two. That Vegas, beyond hockey, Vegas, in my opinion, was the greatest single expansion team in the history of professional sports in North America.
Seattle has some measuring up to do. Should they be judged against that story then in the next 2 weeks?
I mean, we didn't really know what Vegas was after the expansion draft other than Marc-Andre Fleury. Mm-hmm. If you remember back, that he became the storyline of everything. He became the face of the franchise that summer. I mean, you were there. You hosted the darn event. So from that perspective, I think that it might be too soon to be able to judge whether Seattle's successful on the 21st of July. That said, you know, you do have to wonder who is going to be their goaltender, because in the end, it's, you know, goaltending is such a factor in our game right now.
By the way, don't think that I didn't catch on when you said my friends asked me and I tell my friends that they're only going to lose one player. You're talking about general managers there that are your friends. You're not talking about Ted three doors down.
No, I'm talking to managers. Mm-hmm. You know, people that actually you think that I'm still involved in the game.
That's the best part about you. That people tell you things, and I don't know why they tell you things. I haven't figured out that secret, but they tell you things that they don't tell anybody else. Why do you think that is?
Well, I don't embarrass them with it. I don't quote them with it. Quite frankly, I try to make it look like my idea. And which is fascinating in our business, Darren, because when you get information and you go on the air with an opinion and then you get, on social media, who the hell are you? What do you know? You don't know anything. Okay, that's fine. Go ahead. You take your time. And they're just saying, hey, listen, guys, you don't go on the air uninformed. You go on the air with some reasoned, rational opinions that have a little bit of research done to them.
And some intel. Give me the intel on Montreal. Will they make the playoffs next year?
I'll tell you what, when you think that we're going back to the original four divisions, Tampa's going to make the playoffs. Florida's going to make the playoffs. Boston's going to make the playoffs. Who else going to make the playoffs for sure?
Toronto?
I think, listen. So
there's four teams.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, and by the way, that team in Ottawa it's on the Billboard top 100 with a bullet beside it. It's going in the right direction. The two teams that aren't going to make the playoffs in that division are Buffalo and Detroit again. And Steve thinks he's doing the right thing, and he's got some great kids coming from Sweden. They're going in the right direction. Hopefully Donnie Granato will be able to tell you what direction his team is going in when you talk to him. So all of a sudden, I mean, could we actually envision Toronto and Montreal fighting for fourth spot in the division? I might throw Boston in there too. Boston, Montreal, and Toronto, three teams fighting for two spots.
And the crossover too comes into play if you aren't.
Right. But I mean, that's right. But
oh no, do we have a crossover? Yeah, we do.
No, we have wild. There's wild cards, right?
Right.
You can have 5-3 and
yeah.
You know, you'll have to go and go on NHL.com and read the rules again.
I know it's going back to that because I was thinking about the seven and the one division with seven and the other divisions with eight and then the real reason why they did that and blah, blah, blah. Well, blah
no,
blah,
but
blah.
Next year, four divisions of eight.
Eight. It's going to be so much easier.
Easier. Yes, I know. And they said there wasn't going to be any math in this game.
I know. nice plug for Donnie Granato and that interview that's coming up.
It's coming up next, I think.
Yeah. It's okay, after we're done with you. We've only got about 25 minutes. No, we don't have that much time left. Interesting. Tampa's going to play in the same division as the team they beat in the Stanley Cup final for 2 years in a row. That hasn't happened in a long time. Dallas.
That's fascinating. Yeah,
it's just a quirky little stat that I came up with.
Doesn't
mean anything.
It's funny you talked about, I mean, like when we deal with guys like Patrick Maroon who've back-to-back. Corey Perry's been in the Stanley Cup final the last 2 years too. Mm-hmm. And Corey Perry didn't win either time, but I tell you, it shows what pedigree he has as a professional hockey player.
How many cups has Pat Maroon won again?
I believe he's won three.
Three? Okay. I keep losing track because he doesn't tell anybody. And
Right. Yeah.
Keeps it to himself.
After game five, when he says, I don't score any goals. You don't see my name on the scorecard, but I contribute. Okay, Pat. Good.
You know what really made Pat Maroon was his ability to play with Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaf.
Boy, I love them as a linebacker.
Yeah.
I love them as a linebacker. But here Maroon's a good example of a guy that finally understood and adapted to a role. He went to Edmonton, and I think there was a huge expectation that Patrick Maroon was going to be top six guy.
Justified because he'd played with Getzlaf and Perry and was effective.
Yeah. 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 No, that's fair. But when it didn't work there we forget the year in New Jersey, don't we? Wasn't he in New Jersey for a year?
If he was, I don't remember it.
Okay. And then he went to St. Louis, I think. But the fact that I think that there's a guy as he got older and loved the game so much, he wanted to stay in the game, understood what his role was and became one of the perfect role players. And any time you can be used in a piece of trivia with the name Eddie Litzenberger, that's really cool. Okay. Really cool.
Eddie was a pistol, wasn't he?
I never met him. You know, I've never met him. But as a kid, I was always fascinated because we always got those calendars, those great tobacco company calendars at our house. And the 60 Stanley Cup team and the 61 Stanley Cup team and the 62 Stanley Cup team. And Eddie Litzenberger was in Chicago 1 year and in Toronto the next, I guess 61, 62, 63. So that to me, I always thought that was one of the coolest things that he would morph into, go to another team and still win. Al Arbor was comparable. Mm-hmm. When you think what Al Arbor did as a player, he just didn't do it consecutively. Al Arbor was in Detroit and with the Maple Leafs in the early 60s.
Should Tampa be number one, or the odds came out and it's Colorado and it's Vegas and then Tampa are the favorites to win the Stanley Cup next year? Any issues there?
No, not yet. But I'm not big on that stuff this early. Tell me after free agency gets done. Tell me after when the dust settles with the flat cap and people have been moved around. But I think Tampa deserves as much respect as we can give them every day.
Who's a team outside that window that you might go is deserving of a little bit more respect? Florida kind of jumps up to me. I'm afraid of Edmonton and Toronto because of the perennial disappointment. Is Washington, Pittsburgh still there? Pittsburgh.
The one team I wonder about and wonder what they're going to do and how much better they can be and what Gerard can do on Broadway. And that's the Rangers. And there are the Rangers, even with all their tumult recently. That's a good word, huh?
I like
tumult.
I actually thought you stopped and you didn't finish tumultuous.
No, tumult.
Yeah. Tumult.
You know, they have a ton of talent. And I think they're one of the teams that's going to have a busy offseason. And Chris Drury, because Chris Drury has to prove something, too, that he can run a team. And whether that's getting another player, another superstar, or being able to take advantage of what Gerard can bring with a team. And you know what kind of coach Gerard is. He can galvanize a group of guys really well.
See where Jack Eichel or Vladimir Tarasenko end up. Before we let you go, the rights change hands and they go from NBC over to ESPN and Turner with a split rights deal. You work for the league. You were with Hockey Night in Canada. You worked with the league running their television. And you were there at the start when OLN, was it OLN that went on?
OLN versus then became Versus. And then all under the Comcast family, and then Comcast bought NBC as well. So it all became one. Yeah. I was there. I'll tell you what, the 16 years, I think NBC for 16 years did a magnificent job. I think that it did everything that the NHL wanted and needed it to do. I think that there was shoulder programming when they needed shoulder programming. And it wasn't just, the big network and the games. NBC Sports Network did a magnificent job, over the years with their pregame shows, their postgame shows, particularly in the playoffs, and being able to use all the networks of NBC. They did create a style that worked, Well, I do think the whole concept that Sam came up with the announcer between the benches changed. Sam Flood wanted a little more conversational play-by-play as opposed to the prototypical, he's got the puck, they got the puck, he's got the puck, whistle blows and the color man talks. I think he wanted more conversation. Sam and his people did a solid job for a long period of time, and the NBA and the NHL, I know, is grateful. I mean, listen, I was there when we decided to go outside in Buffalo for the first Winter Classic, and that was really at NBC's insistence. NBC was a very good partner for a long time, but with everything, things change, money gets bigger. Now it's I think it's great that the Disney people and the Turner people are involved in hockey, and hopefully that they have a chance to grow the game as NBC did.
Do you think it will be different at either one of those two networks?
Different than what we've seen?
Yeah, the presentation.
I think that they will try. You know, here's the magic of doing television, and particularly our sport. You know, we're the only major sport that actually has a barrier between the cameras and the players. You know, whether it's boards or glass, it's really hard. It makes it much more difficult. It's made it much more difficult during the pandemic as well. And so that's one challenge. We're not going to have cameras on the ice. So how do you then put your imprint on the game that makes it different? There, 90% of what we see, Darren, is the same as I would tell you it was 40 years ago. It's that 10% tweak. Sam Flood and NBC did the 10% tweak inside the glass. A little different in the play-by-play commentary. Those are the types of things that you can work with. But 90% always stays the same. So what you have to make sure is that you don't insult the hardcore fan and make sure you respect the 90%, and then you can play all you want with the 10%. Just play. I've always prescribed that it's like you're regifting, right? You know, when I bought you that beautiful Vitamix for your wedding present, and you said, well, I've already got a Vitamix, so you rewrapped it and gave it to somebody else. It's just new wrapping paper that we're talking about when it comes to what networks will be able to do with their content. And I want to see the puck go in the net. I want to hear the guy say he shoots, he scores. And I think most hockey fans want to hear that too.
Yeah, well, Rogers tried referee helmets, track cams, all that.
God bless them. Mm-hmm. You know, try things. But then you have to go with what works. Go with what works. And that's what ESPN and Turner will learn in the first while. You know, they'll overcome some mistakes. Will they make mistakes? Absolutely. They'll overcome mistakes. They'll learn from their mistakes. And I hope hockey fans in the United States are patient with both networks as they try to work through it.
Do you think we'll get some controversy from them because they'll be competing against each other?
Nothing wrong with competition.
Yeah. And by controversy, I mean like what panelists say or play-by-play people, commentators say.
Well, I would hope that Chris Chelios doesn't just give me the same old, same old. I would hope Mark doesn't give me the same old, same old. And my expectation is that Wayne will not at the same time, you know, and put Wayne in a position to be able to tell us how he sees the game and what makes the game so good without too much hockey speak.
When was the last time you talked to Wayne?
Probably about a month ago.
Yeah.
Just after he got the job. Just after he got the job.
What's your advice for the American networks?
Oh, no, I'm not going there. I'm not going there.
Ah, yes. I may have been saving that one.
Oh, yeah, you think? You know, learn and listen.
if you want the answer to that question, no. Pay for it.
I think I told you that the last time too, didn't I?
You're right. Last time I actually had you on pre-partnership with the National Hockey League and NHL Studios, we talked about you writing a book.
Yeah.
You ever going to do that?
Thinking about it, you know, trying to figure out what to do and what stories to tell. And as my lovely wife, Mickey, will say, who would buy that? I mean, she doesn't think I'm very funny or I'm a good storyteller. So that's okay. You turned your mic off.
I would. It'd be fun.
Yeah, I know. I think I could probably sell 7 or 8 copies. So that means in order to get a good advance, they're probably worth about $18,000 each. So
will we take anything out of the pandemic in how we broadcast the games, how we operated the games, how the teams operated? Do you think anything spills over or do we go back to normal?
Here's the one thing I would love to see. It's a little thing. It's very little. But I think about and worry about these things. And I loved what all the teams did with it. I hope we never see an anthem singer on the ice again.
Why?
I love them in the people. I love them in the crowd. You know, what Sonya did in Tampa, you know, what they did in Montreal, but through the playoffs, to see the anthem singer amongst the people, I thought that was really good. And it's one less piece of traffic. I know the guys in hockey ops will be happy about it, but it'd be one less thing to gum up the Zamboni area. Mm-hmm. You know, I to me, that was, it was a necessary thing to do for health and safety, but I liked it. I really did. I mean, to see other parts of the arena rather than on the ice, I thought that was kind of cool.
Good observation. Vegas did it from the castle with Carnell.
Well, everybody had to do it.
Yeah.
And it forced,
not everybody has a castle.
No, but what do you think we're going to see in Seattle? We're going to see a pirate ship, or what are we going to see?
I don't know. You know, or a scoreboard there.
Or a squid. We're going to see a giant squid.
Squid would be good.
Yeah.
But they're not going to have that traditional center ice scoreboard. It's going to be two scoreboards at either end of the rink. It's going to be, they're already different.
Okay, so where did that used to exist in the National Hockey League?
You're going to tell me. Where did that used to? Oh, Atlanta?
Brendan Byrne Arena.
Oh,
Meadowlands,
really?
In the Meadowlands. Originally, yeah. Originally, there wasn't a center hung scoreboard. Difficult to hang a scoreboard. And now I've been in the old Seattle Center Coliseum when it was in its prime, and they did have a center hung scoreboard, but it's tough to hang it from that pyramid type thing that they have with the weight, I would assume, right, because of what the scoreboard would cause to the structure. So that's going to be a beautiful building, though. It's going to be spectacular.
So Tampa Bay ended on we'll bookend it. Tampa Bay wins back-to-back Stanley Cups after some hardships. You and I were there in 2015 when they made it to the Stanley Cup final. Do you remember that series? Because two things jump out. Well, three things. One, we listened to Dane Cook all the time when we traveled. You and
yeah.
I. We were the team that was covering it for Sportsnet. Two was the rain the night of the clinching game that delayed the cup arrival. But they fixed that. That got taken care of. And three, remember Ben Bishop was hurt in and out of that series, and there was this kid that got thrown in.
Yeah.
And that kid had ice water in his veins, and that kid is now the best goaltender in the world.
Well, and there were people at the time saying, hey, guys, Ben Bishop's not here long-term anyway. Vasilevsky's is the future of the franchise. Remember the other magic thing of Tampa at that time were the triplets.
Yes.
Kucherov, Johnson, and Palat. And Tyler Johnson played that whole final with a broken hand. The one thing I think is, and everybody talks about this team got stayed together and learned together and how great it was all the way back to the American League and Syracuse and Norfolk. But this team, after they lost that year, faced some adversities itself. The following year, I think it was the following year, they didn't make the playoffs. And so, I mean, this was a team that was on the cusp of greatness and then fell back. And then a few years later, John Tortorella's Columbus Blue Jackets swept them. And yet ownership, and this is where Jeffrey Vinnick deserves a ton of credit, ownership and management stayed with the program. And that, I mean, if owners could please take a memo, read, I mean, this is supposed to be a copycat league. You know, copycat what Jeff Vinnick did. He trusted his hockey people. He trusted Steve Yzerman. Then he trusted Julien Brisebois. And they all trusted John Cooper. And there wasn't any panic moves in the offseason to fire the coach or change over the core guys. And here we are now, you know, 6 years later, this team has been to five conference finals or semifinals and then won the Stanley Cup the last 2 years. And they're a model franchise, and it all stems from patience, being patient. And you know, it's the old cliche. I mean, you hear about it all the time, is understanding and believing in the process. And that's what Jeff Vinnick did. That's what Steve Yzerman did, tweaks on the periphery. That's what Julien Brisebois did, tweaks on the periphery, but the core stayed together. The coach was never in trouble. And life went on, and they're paying dividends because of that.
And Stephen Wise doing it with Detroit. Like Blashill hasn't had any winning seasons in the last handful of years.
Yeah.
And he hasn't changed coaches. He gave him an extension.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Steve Yzerman has a plan, and you have to believe in the plan. And I tell you what, I think 18 months from now, we're going to be talking about some of those young guys that Stevie's drafted and the Red Wings on their way back. And we're gonna, and Little Caesars are going to be full, and we're not going to see all those red seats.
Thanks for doing this. You're on the podcast with Bob McCowan. You guys are doing great work. You guys have more sponsors than you have time for conversation.
That is the idea, sir.
Yeah. Where are you and Bob going to go for dinner tonight?
Or order from? No, we're ordering. I don't want to compromise your sponsors with our sponsors.
You are an awesome dude. We've got Donnie in the green room. He's ready to go, so we're going to slide over to him. But really, thanks for popping on. It's we talk all the time. It's not like we don't talk, but I like interviewing and picking your brain when you actually have to answer the question.
Well, I'm glad you sent me all the questions beforehand because I could practice those ad libs.
Be good, John.
Have fun in Tokyo.
Yeah. What do you want? What do you want me to bring you back?
Kimono.
Okay.
I need a kimono. And by the way, I might be a double XL.
Well, you can always shrink it.
Or rewrap it and regift it and give it away, you know?
Bye.
See you later.
Fun. I love it when John has fun. And Donald Granato would love to be in a position where he was enjoying himself like John Cooper or Nikita Kucherov. We'll get to Kucherov in just a little bit. How about Toronto? Like, Toronto would explode with a party like Tampa Bay is going to have. And Buffalo, well, we don't really know. They've earned their right to have some good things come their way. And Don Granato's in charge of that journey. He's in the green room. He's going to stop by in just a little bit. The long road is ahead for the Buffalo Sabres. I don't really know who's going to be in his lineup when training camp starts. But after our conversation with the new head coach of the Buffalo Sabres, I'm here to say I have faith in Don Granato. He has won me over. And listen to the end of the interview, because Don also drops this little nugget about his hockey career that I had no idea. Well, I just never heard anything like it before. Here's Don Granato, coach of the Buffalo Sabres, on the Chirp with Darren Millard. Does it feel any different now that the interim tag is gone?
It certainly feels nice, much, much nicer to put that behind you. And, you know, but my mind was always on next season anyway, even though, you know, I did have to go through an interview process. For me, I wasn't even thinking of it as an interview. I was thinking of it as next season, you know, what we can do, what the possibilities are, what we need to do. And so to finally get to the end of that process and know, you know, you're the guy that's going to be able to lead the team, that part of it is really, really exciting to move on and, again, get moving in that direction.
I would think it would be a little different because you've been interviewed for so many jobs before and you're trying to sell people on what you could do. But this was what you did do. It was that a little bit different?
Yeah, it was. It was much easier, having been in a position where, you know, Kevin and ownership could see and even ask questions on what you did or didn't do or would become. And there was a reference of the past season. So that absolutely helps, it was nice to have that in this position. I obviously thank them for that opportunity of coaching the second half of the year. And I've mentioned many times, I really thought, okay, I'm in this position, I want to be here next fall. So I have to coach to better our position next fall as a team or as individual players. And I stuck to that. I wasn't thinking about, you know, how do I coach to get this job? I was more thinking of how do I coach so if I get this job, the team's in a better place and our players are in a better place. And that was a real key and a real factor. Sorry about that background noise.
No.
Real factor in it.
Was that Jack calling?
Yeah. That was
we'll get to that in just a little bit. But what was your selling point to Kevin and the group when you interviewed with them?
Well, I don't know if I had necessarily a selling point. I mean, I just told, you know, I spoke on how I felt about things and where I felt the organization and franchise was at this moment and where it could get to, and my feeling very quickly. You know, we needed to establish a direction, and I felt we needed to establish a direction as a coaching staff. And that your players need to feel and see that direction. And they're part in it at an individual level. So they need to see the direction of the team and the part. And the guys, a credit to them. I had lots of great support from older players, lots of great energy from younger players. And they were able to see the direction we wanted to go as a team and see their part in that. So, you know, I spoke a lot about that and the opportunity we had from that moving forward. The trajectory of some of our lot of really all of our young players, you know, I've had an extensive opportunity to work with young talent that's around splattered all over the NHL from, you know, Matthew and Brady Tkachuk to Charlie McAvoy and Zach Werenski, the Austin Matthews, you know, these are guys I worked with at 16, 15, 16, 17 years old, that I was very excited about then to know they had that potential to play in the NHL. And this group here has all of that. I mean, they're in the NHL playing and they have that enormous potential ahead of them.
I don't know when it was during your tenure, but you did some skills work in a practice instead of like the regular practice. And that jumped out at me. Where did that come from and why did you do that?
Well, you know, we weren't winning consistently. And when that happens, you just have to, you know, people talk about, you know, we can't accept this or we can't. There are certain things you have to accept. And we had to accept we just weren't good enough. And we needed to get better. We didn't. So I turned the focus from, you know, a little less of focus on our system and a lot more focus on trying to find ways to get our players to become better, a little more skill work so they felt better the next game individually. And then I figured that would come back and help our system, whatever system we wanted to run. So we shifted our focus and the players, again, embraced that and competed harder in practice than you normally would at that point in a regular season. Didn't save it for the game, and they worked on it in practice. So the emphasis was just to do a little bit more skill work so they felt a little better going into the next game, and it worked. They did. They felt much better, and we improved. I thought we improved tremendously from that point.
Is your biggest challenge mental or physical?
We got over a big mental challenge, I felt. You know, mm-hmm. when I took over, we were 12 games into an 18-game losing streak. First meeting was, for me, was 2 hours before we were going to play the Boston Bruins, which was a daunting task. Mm-hmm. On any given night, and now we're in a 12-game skid and there's a coaching change. So we really worked, and I remember asking the players to pick their heads up as I talked. So we had to work on the belief system, in the short term, and we weren't able to change that until the guys could see ways that they could potentially win games and things that they could control within a game that would help them win. That I believe is behind us. I think our belief system is strong enough now that we can move on to other things. It's always a progression. You can't really jump 3 steps ahead when you haven't, you know, you don't have the foundation under you, or you don't have the first step done. So that was really the big initial step in taking over or moving into the position as a head coach. And now I believe we're there. I think our guys come in with a real strong belief system and an identity, team identity that we can build from day one in camp.
So you think you've already turned the page?
I do in the respect. Say your question again so I make sure I hit it.
Well, it was just you've already turned the page from the mental side of it. Physically, you're always trying to improve and get better talent and make your players better.
Yeah, you're challenged, you know, psychologically every day within our sport. But I do believe our guys are, you know, have a strength now that they don't worry about what comes next or what vulnerability there might be, because they've started to grasp that, okay, I feel vulnerable, but I also know I can find a solution. I can find a resolution. So, and when I do, I'm going to actually become better by going through this adversity or this challenge. I've said it many times, the psyche it's extremely strong and can be extremely weak, but you're in charge. And you know, figuring out how to take charge so it becomes extremely strong is a key to success at any level in any endeavor. And it's no different playing hockey and playing hockey at the National Hockey League level. So I do feel our guys actually welcome challenge and embrace challenge, where prior we were nervous in that respect.
Did people reach out with a lot of advice, and, or did they let you be given the challenge of what you were going through when you first took over?
There were both.
Yeah.
We've all been in this business for a long time. So your phone is inundated every day with messages or phone calls, and you know, some very good people that I respect and have worked with and worked for had some great advice. And then there were others that were just, you know, wishing you well. And, you know, it was great to feel and see both, in regard, but, you know, within our locker room, I have to say, you're making me think about players in our locker room. Sammy Reinhart was incredible. Rasmus Ristolainen was incredible, and Kyle Okposo and Eric Staal, mm-hmm. Was incredible. And, you know, even the other day in the middle of a Stanley Cup final, I get a long text from Eric Staal when I got appointed the position. And those guys were very engaged in helping us feel good about what we were doing, feel good about putting that jersey over our shoulders and competing and being a Buffalo Sabre. They helped out tremendously, and it made my life a lot easier.
What was the advice that you got from the family? Who talked to you the most?
Tony, I talked to two, three times a day, just naturally. You know, he's one, he doesn't sit still. So he's, you know, there might be my phone might ring again during this interview with him, but he's been through this. You know, he coached at the NHL level. He got into coaching after me, so he leaned on me a lot when he got into coaching and left his playing career or moved on from his playing career. And he's a guy that I'm able to bounce a lot of things off of. I've been lucky to be part of the family I've been in, because anytime I have questions or concerns or need someone to talk to, I have those people to talk to. You know, I can pick up and call my brother-in-law Ray to talk hockey, or obviously Tony with years and years of experience, and Cammy, who's working in the NHL now. And that's always a nice thing to resource to have.
You listen to Ray. You don't talk with Ray.
Yeah, you do listen to Ray. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. But he's fun to listen to.
Yes.
I will say that. And yeah, he's awesome. As much all kidding aside, he is really very intelligent.
I love the way his mind works too.
At different levels, and it's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what makes him so incredible. And he's honest too. Yeah, there's no BS about him. And
the best part is he's a fun guy to give a hard time to, as you know.
So what kind of coach will you be now that you've got the full-time reins?
Well, I think what kind of coach you need to be is really the way I think of that question, and it's what your team needs. You're trying to move your team along. You're assessing where your team is, and then is within the context of your competitors and what you might need next, you know, collectively, individually, and then targeting how to make those improvements, how to make those next steps. So I mentioned last week at our initial press conference that, you know, we will focus on progress and moving this team forward. When we do, at some point, there'll be a threshold we'll hit where we're going to win consistently, and you can win consistently. We're not at that yet, so we're not going to be distracted by or pulled away from making progress incrementally and moving this team forward every day, individually and collectively.
You don't really even know what your roster is going to look like, right? Like there's some questions out there.
No, and I think a lot of teams are in that same situation. You know, there's some teams that, you know, have the great fortune of having players for years in and years out and having the same power play and the depth. You know, we're not in that position yet, but we do know, and we got a real good look at, and it was important. Again, you know, I reference back to what I said. If I'm in the interim coaching position, which I was, and I'm thinking about, I want to be behind the bench next season, I want to see what Casey Mittelstead can do. I want to see what Rasmus Dahlin can do, and Tage Thompson and Rasmus Asplund. I need to see these guys, what they can do, what they can improve on really quick. So I was putting them in positions that they not only could succeed, but may be would be really challenged. And that was important for me to see that, because if I'm going to move this franchise along, again, you know, individually and collectively, that's information I need in preparation for the season ahead. So while there's a lot of pieces that we don't have yet, we do know a lot of great pieces that we have in Anders Bjork, who I didn't mention yet. Again, Matthias Samuelsson and Henry Jokiharju, Jack Quinn, who's, you know, has a chance to come up here real quick. So there's a lot of pieces that we do have that are fun to work with because of their potential, immediate and long-term.
Okay, that's twice you brought up that strategy about planning for the future and not focusing on the job at hand, which the job at hand helps you get the job long-term. Focusing on the future may set up the job for somebody else. How did you come to that sense in your heart that you are willing to work on the future instead of focusing on trying to get your first National Hockey League job full time?
Well, I first of all, I felt I was ready to coach in the National Hockey League for a bit. And, you know, you need an opportunity to do that. But in the process of the last 25 years, I feel like I've made sure my goal was to be prepared when I got the opportunity, not to worry about when I was going to get it, just be prepared. And through that process of 25 years, you have the faith that you're going to get there. And you know, you watch other people get jobs. Sometimes it could be frustrating. You coached against them and had success against them. Those things, you know, they go through your mind. But personally, you have to let that go. And I would just say, again, you know, and thinking in my own, you know, I need to make sure I'm ready when I get there. That's the number one goal. And so I wanted to get lots of different experiences. So, you know, back to your question of, okay, I could be improving this team as an interim head coach for the next guy to take over in the fall. It might not be me. I'm not fear-based. I don't want to be fear-based. You know, you don't win being fear-based.
I don't want to be either, but sometimes I look after the number one.
Well, here I am in the National Hockey League and Kevin Adams and the Pegulas gave me a great opportunity to show what I could do as a head coach. And I felt comfortable that, you know, we were moving the team along and players along that, hey, if this works out and it's meant to be, it's meant to be, I'll be ready for it. And our team will be better prepared for it. And if it's not, then, you know, maybe I lost something, you know, I lost the position, but I still took advantage. I felt I would have taken advantage of the opportunity at hand. And that is, again, doing the things that are going to help me become a more successful coach in the National Hockey League, moving players in a team along, you know, a spectrum, and not just going for one win, just to get a win at the sacrifice of that progress. And again, we didn't play conservative. I don't think you improve enough playing conservative, but this league and this level oftentimes forces you to become conservative and not give up a goal. You're up 1-0, really hunker down and play defense. But if we're going to move our players, you know, in development, we couldn't be as conservative. And so, yeah, you run a risk, but as I mentioned, I'm not going to fear that. It's not something I would do. And yeah, I could have lost the job going forward, but I was willing to say, so be it.
What are your expectations for next season then?
I'm going to, you know, keep reverting back to not because I'm avoiding that question. I fully believe that you need to keep the only thing we have in control. We have control of is making our players better and our team better. I don't have control of another team in the National Hockey League. We're going to go and compete against them, you know, the next night, and we're going to strategize at that time against the roster they may have and put together a game plan. I've done that, you know, for thousands of games in my coaching career, whether it be, you know, Team Russia or Team Czech or, you know, through the American Hockey League or as an assistant in the NHL. So, you know, having a game plan and a pre-scout is routine. You don't do that until the day or two before the game, and you target what you may want to attack with what they have or don't have or missing and what you have at that moment. Everything else, there's a time and a place for that. Everything else is, again, how can Rasmus Dahlin become better next week than he is this week? And if he is, and I'm running a system that I want, our system's going to run better. So I am going to stay focused on that. I've watched that over the years with all the teams I've had, and that's brought the greatest success and consistency, and it'll be no different here.
The fans, they may have, and you can have a drink. I apologize for the short question before. The fans may have an expectation. They're starved, Donnie. You know that. They want to see some progress. So how do you balance some progress for the big picture with the little picture?
Well, when you think of progress, I mean, the way you mentioned progress there, it sounds like you're talking about wins.
Yes.
Or playoff appearances.
Well, not playoff appearances. That's a big step, but wins for sure.
Yeah. And every day everything I've said is there's no question we're going for a win. It's just, what expense are we playing? Are we going for a win and not giving players experience? Are we going for a win and nobody got better? Like I said, you can go at wins very conservatively and get a few more wins, but did you really become better? Did your players become better? Mm. If they keep becoming better, you don't have to go after a single win. You'll win consistently. So in the process, you know, for the fans, I'm not concerned about that, because our players played with a lot of passion and energy and excitement in their game. We came back in a lot of games in the third period. Kept games close. When teams tried to intimidate us, we fought back because we were in the moment and engaged. We weren't worried about the end result. We weren't worried about, oh my God, we might lose. We our guys snapped and fought for their teammate. You know, so again, I think what fans want is they want to see the passion that's in our sport of hockey. And if, you know, win or lose, we need to bring that and that energy. And we need to run a system as a coach that allows for that. So there's plenty that we should be able to provide for our fans in the process to winning consistently. And that doesn't diminish the fact that we can win right now. I'm not telling you that any night, our guys will believe any night they can win, or each night they can win. I shouldn't say any night. When they go into the game, they'll have a game plan. And they did even late in the year. You saw us late in the year. We were able to beat the Islanders twice. And then we went into Pittsburgh the last two games of the year. And our guys believe they could win any one of those games. And again, that's their belief system is much stronger.
Okay, so Jack Eichel, where is that? What do you know, and how do you address it?
Well, there's nothing for me to address per se. You know, I will prepare for the season right now with Jack here. Jack is here. So, you know, as I think about the season, I think about all options. We also know that there's plenty of trade talk about Jack not being here. So as a coach, you've got to be prepared for the range and the spectrum of any of that. And we will, and I'll keep thinking on all of that as the you know, things proceed forward. I just got into Buffalo last night, just sat with Kevin for an hour this morning. I'll be sitting with Kevin, you know, all the way through the draft and free agency on a regular basis now, and be more in tune of maybe details that I don't know, that I wasn't privy to during the interview process. So that's coming. But as far as my relationship with Jack, I'm the coach. I'm not the manager. I'm not the owner of the team. I have a player coach relationship with Jack. I coached Jack at the national team program. You know, I had that honor, you know, I consider to have coached him there and build a relationship with him there. I've talked to him since I took this job, and I didn't sit there and ask him about his injury, and he doesn't need me to ask him about his injury.
Yeah.
You know, we need to talk about hockey and life and, you know, as it pertains to hockey. And, like I said, I've had a history with Jack. So those conversations are real easy. And as things play out, you know, I'm sure that Jack and I are not going to have any challenge. You know, he wants to play hockey. So if he's here in September, I'm sure he'll be very, very excited to be a part of it. And you can be assured I will. But anything in the process, I just doesn't make any sense for me to be swayed, involved. Like my position is a coach.
And you touched on it there. I was wondering whether you could be or feel the need to be sort of a recruiter role to get him back in a positive frame of mind with the organization.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel I need to be a recruiter. No, yeah. I mean, I
that may be the wrong word, Donnie. I'm sorry, but you know what I mean. Like,
I'm very comfortable with Darren, with my relationship with Jack. You know, again, it's a player coach relationship. It's a relationship that I feel has been built over years. And you know, there's other sides to there's lots of other things that go on beyond a player coach relationship. But at the end of the day, I have a player coach relationship and I need to take care of that. As I would every other player, has to be important to me as a coach. And I can tell you all the guys are, I believe in all our guys.
Who did you see some incredible progress out of during the darkest time in the losing streak to the end where you guys were competitive and really showing some spunk and some resolve? Is there a couple of players where you went, wow, that is some great building block of foundation to build on for next year?
Yeah, I mean, lots of guys come to mind in the
which know, is great.
Which is great. You're right. Yeah. It is great. Casey Middlestead was probably the nicest one because he had third year pro. He was year or two before me. But in any event, you hadn't seen a turning point yet with Casey. He hadn't really been able to establish himself as an effective NHL player that can contribute to winning. And that happened. And underlying all this, Casey and the talent he has, what came to the forefront and was extremely noticeable to me as a coach was his competitiveness. He is a competitor. And it's much more than hard work. It's beating the guy that he lines up next to or across from, I should say. He wants to beat him. And whether it's a face-off against a top centerman or it's a battle as he's leaving the ice, which happened several times entering our bench, one more shot. He's a competitive guy. And that was something that it's hard to see when the guy is trying to make the team as a skill guy, even. And because he is highly skilled. So that was awesome to see. And then obviously, I kept Yoka Haru and Dallin together and I put them against top players on the other team. And I said, listen, you guys are going to have to survive this and you're going to have to figure it out. I'm going to help you, but I'm not giving you all the answers. There's a lot of read and react and a lot of discretion that needs to be had. And I'm, going to keep putting you out there and you have to focus. You have to engage in that. And their development really, really excelled. They took a lot more initiative. They were able to correct their own mistakes, and that was fun to watch.
So you're sitting around the family dinner table. Cammy's got the draft coming up with Seattle. Ray's got the great new opportunity with the U.S. television deal. Tony's got Cole Caulfield. You've got the full-time National Hockey League job, which is awesome. Who's got the story of the year around the dinner table?
Boy, I mean, there's some big ones there with Seattle and Cole Caulfield has been really exciting, but and Ray's news is really exciting. I don't know. I think I went to fourth.
No, you didn't.
Yeah. I mean, I do. I think that's some pretty exciting stuff. So as you made me think about it, geez, I should probably call them and congratulate them again on all that.
Hey, I'm looking behind you. The whiteboard's
office. I'm in Chris's office.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, we got to get some stuff on the shelf.
I don't want anybody to see my office, Darren. It's all secret.
Do you have your lines up in your office?
No. I did look at, lines in depth this morning. But again, you just learn, and I don't, maybe it's because I coached in the American League so long. You're always losing your best player in the American League. Yeah. You're always losing. So when there's something happens up top, that guy that was running your power player, that, you know, your number one defenseman or goalie, he's gone. So you just learn that you have to be ready to adjust and adapt. And it makes you a better coach in all of those years. So you don't, I honestly don't stress out over it. I look at our lines and our depth and I think of, okay, if this happens, what would we do here? You know, what would be if we were going into this game against this type of team, would we shift lines? And so I love doing that. That never stops. But I never get, locked in on something and think this is the only thing. You have to be able to adjust. As we watch in the playoffs, the teams that are able to adjust even series to series and game to game are why they're successful. And this is no different, at the start of the year.
You look happy, man.
I am. I'm happy that, certainly happy to be here. I mentioned that, when you're around these players and you get to know your players and your team and you watch their commitment, this is where I wanted to be. And I didn't want to go anywhere else. I had lots of people. You mentioned those friends that call and look out for you. And they're saying, hey, aren't you going to go after this job? Or aren't you going to go after that job that was vacancies? And I said, no, I'm not. Right now, I just can't move there. And I might have been sitting without a job, but I said, I don't want our players to hear that I'm going after another job in the NHL. This is the place I want to be. These are the guys I want to work with. And I'm very happy for all of that.
So you didn't apply for anything else?
Nope. When I thought about it, I just didn't think it was right. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say I would have got another job. I'm not applying that by any means.
No,
but I just didn't think that, I didn't want anybody to see that I was trying to go get another job. For me, it's not about getting a job. It's about being in the right spot. And you mentioned my long wait to be in the National Hockey League. I was fine waiting for a long time. I saw lots of coaches that I coached against go up and it was too early and too soon and maybe the wrong situation. And now they don't have a job and they lost their chance to establish themselves as an NHL head coach. And these are good coaches that went in and it wasn't the right situation. So for me, it's always been about the right situation, even though you're watching things that you could be envious of. I didn't want that to affect me in a negative manner. I don't think it has. But it certainly was some things that went through my mind and I had to let go of. And so when other vacancies opened around the league this year, yeah, I would think about it for a moment and then say, it's just not right. Because what I have or could have here, I really believe is special in the form of opportunity. And I'm really happy, as you mentioned, as we started here, that I am in this spot.
I got a long plane ride coming up this weekend. I'm going to listen back to this because talking to you, Donnie, it's therapeutic. Like it is. You're so positive, man. And you look at it big picture, and I don't look at it big picture all the time. And I know a lot of other people that wouldn't do it in your situation. I don't know where that comes from, but it's impressive.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for that. I appreciate that. I was a goalie until I was a sophomore in high school. And one thing that really helped me, I switched from goalie to forward and I had to make myself a better hockey player. I wanted to go to the University of Wisconsin. There was no way I was going to go there. Pat Flatley and Chris Chelios were there at the time. And I thought, I'm not going to be able to play at Wisconsin unless I'm on a scholarship. They're just not going to play a walk-on. So I had to go from goalie to forward my sophomore year in high school. And I studied NHL film. I asked my parents for a VCR for my birthday. And all I did was record games on the USA Network. And I watched something. I'd watch a nice move that happened or a zone entry. And I would rewind the tape and I'd say, okay, what happened? What were the details there? Why did the defenseman back up? And, why did he give up the line? Or, how could he have held the line? And so I really had to teach myself. And I saw the process of that. And I've had that within my coaching since. And it helped me tremendously in coaching and certainly development. You gain a lot more patience when you can see the process of things. And what we do is always a process.
I've never heard that before. Somebody changing, but like I've heard guys becoming a goaltender later in life just to try it, but changing that late and still having a playing career. Wow. Like that's crazy. Yeah.
Well, I had Tony who's 3 years older than me and used to beat the crap out of me as a goalie. So yeah, we had those soft pads or shoulder pads. He used to think it was funny to shoot pucks off my collarbone. And So I had incentive to get out of the net.
Were you a good goalie?
But I wanted to. I just wanted to skate. I wanted to score. I wanted to skate.
Hey, this has been a lot of fun. I'm so pumped for you. I'm really, really proud of you. I think it's going to be an awesome opportunity, and that fan base deserves somebody like you in charge that's so positive and has such a great outlook. So best of luck, and can't wait to watch your success next year.
Thank you, Darren. Thanks for your time, and I appreciate it as well.
So a lot of questions about that, and I've never heard of a player going from goaltender to skater at that stage of his career. That was awesome. But looking forward to Donnie Granato, looking forward to seeing who's in this lineup. I don't know whether it's going to be Jack Eichel. I don't know whether it's going to be the perceived first overall pick in Owen Power, who's got that number one rating. Talking about going back to Michigan for another year, that could play a role in what Buffalo does. I loved what Gerard Gallant said about Owen Power when he coached him at the World Championships. Said when he first saw him play, Owen Power is going to be a good, good player, good defenseman, long career. And then after he watches them for a couple of weeks and they win gold, he thinks, well, that's a combination between Chris Pronger and Nick Lidstrom. That's pretty good. If Owen Power wants to go back to college for 1 year and he's a combination of Nick Lidstrom and Chris Pronger, fine. I'll wait for that. So wish Donnie Granato and the company with the Buffalo Sabres the best of luck here. He's the final guest of season one of The Chirp with Darren Millard. But we leave you with just a celebration. And Bobby, tell me what you thought. Nikita Kucherov, he didn't win the Conn Smythe, but he wins the award for best Zoom interview of the National Hockey League season. And it came in right at the very end. It was wonderful.
Well, before I get to Kucherov, if you want to bone up on the NHL draft, listen to Adam Kimmelman, Mike Morial, NHL draft class. They got a bunch of episodes up. They talk to all the NHL Central scouting folks, and they also talk to the players. We did an interview with Power. So go check that out. NHL draft class, Kucherov now. I saw some folks on Twitter complaining about his little press conference. Give me a break. He's having fun. Love to see it. The same folks who are complaining about him having this outlandish press conference and having fun are the same folks that are saying NHL players need to show more personality. Let the personality come out. You win the Stanley Cup. As long as you're not harming anyone and you're having a good time, you're having fun, it's all fair game. So that was a real funny press conference. If you hadn't seen it, go check it out. Kucherov. I mean, knocks it out of the park. It was tremendous entertainment.
Slap on the desk, and Joe Smith asked the question, and then he went off. So it was beautiful. I had a buddy who won the Stanley Cup a few years ago. You should have saw me just being around the Stanley Cup and what an idiot I was just because my buddy won it. I can't imagine being a star player and winning it up there in the Zoom press conference. And maybe that's the last Zoom press conference, but what an era to go through in the final Stanley Cup celebrations, or the early part of the Stanley Cup celebrations, but the final one with the Zoom. Seattle, they are going to have an interesting road. We've got their expansion draft in the next couple of weeks. 32 clubs will then plan the strategy to win the Stanley Cup next year. We started this podcast right in the middle of the pandemic, and what a revealing conversation. Episode one. Was right, John Cooper back then, and now Bobby, he's celebrating a second straight Stanley Cup. And I think a lot of what he talked about, people should go back and listen to that interview. A lot of what he talked about then is still applicable, and you witnessed and experienced a lot of his opinions and how he runs the team is still applicable now.
Mm-hmm. And I would say the same for a lot of the interviews we've done over the course of the year, going to Rod Brendamore, of course, the Jack Adams winner, players, Nick Foligno and Connor Garland and Pierre-Luc Dubois we had on after the trade. So the interviews still hold up. So go listen, go check out some previous episodes of The Chirp, and we'll get ready for the 21-22 campaign as you jump on a jet and head over to Tokyo to do the Olympics, Darren. So have a great time.
Thank you. I'm going to download all the NHL draft class episodes and listen to them as I go over, because the NHL draft is actually round one is on the same night of the opening ceremonies. in Tokyo, opening ceremony in Tokyo. So I'm going to get just all caught up to date on what's going on going into the National Hockey League draft and then do the Olympics and then come back. And we will work on season two of The Chirp. And one of the things that we've striven, really tried to do on this podcast is have some conversations that is hockey related, but like the Mark Stone that dials into a lot of other areas. We did that with the Bob, we did that with Stone. So there's just don't think you see an interview from February, don't think it's not relevant. There's a lot there in and around the player's opinion. But thanks, Bobby. You've been awesome. Matthew Nicholson has been great. But to you and I, we have those three or four calls during the week and those text messages and trying to plan things out. And you've been awesome in holding my hand and guiding me through this. So just a special acknowledgement to you. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
You bet. It was a pleasure. Enjoy Tokyo. And if you think the NHL linguists are tough, the Olympic linguists, you said opening ceremonies, they'll give you a hard time. Opening ceremony, Darren, come on.
Opening ceremony, yes. I've got to bone up on all of that and make sure that everything is absolutely IOC approved. And we'll make sure that's what 10 and a half hours on the plane is for, with the NHL draft class and making sure that all my language is perfect. Also, Matthew Nicholson, National Hockey League, Steve Mayer, NHL, Sage Salmons, and Eric Tosi, my bosses with the Vegas Golden Knights, for allowing me the freedom to pursue this project with Bob. So real shout out to them and the PR directors from around the league. This does not happen without you. And stick tap to all the PR directors for making the guests available and going through some different scenarios to get the players and the coaches and the different personalities out and on board. And I can't wait to see Top Gun 2, by the way. John Hamm, that's been sitting in the back of my mind, Johnny, right there from the first time that we talked about you getting those Ray-Bans. That's been there. But on behalf of Bob Bender, I'm Darren Millard. Thanks for listening to the final episode of season one of The Chirp with Darren Millard. Stay safe, be well, and we'll chat with you again next season.